Welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast, and it is a new season, 2025. So exciting. Looking forward to this season. I think we have a lot in store, but we also have a lot of exciting things to talk about here on the podcast. As always, you have our hosts, myself, Samantha, and of course, Anton. And a great new addition to start this year off is our new host as well for the podcast, Savannah. Savannah, welcome. You've been a part of this through 2024 as well. And we're really glad and happy to have you as a permanent fixture in the podcast. So welcome aboard.
Thanks, Sam. And thanks, Anton, as well for having me. Yeah, the 2024 season was my first season of Formula One that I really drove myself into and focused on a lot of the technicalities of the actual sport, and it's only grown over the winter break. So thank you for having me on, and I look forward to what this year holds.
And Anton, like I said, we have of course a lot to talk about for the season, so why don't you start us off?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's great to be back and great to be getting ready to watch Formula One again. As you're used by now, this is the third season that we're doing the podcast. It's good to do this preseason episode. That way we have a couple of topics that we can get excited about. I think most importantly, things that we should talk about is, well, first of all, the new rookies that we're going to have, that we're going to be watching this season. We've had the livery reveals at the event in London, so I think that's enough food for thought as well. And we just finished the testing days, so I guess that's another topic that we're all excited to get into. And then, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about the updates that we're going to have for the Forecast app this year. There's a few new features. A couple of you might have already seen some of them. We're still working on a couple of others. And yeah, after all, it's also nice to have a little conversation about the expectations that each one of us has for the season. But I guess that's something that we're going to be talking about also related to test day. So I don't know, Sam, Savannah, pick one of the topics. What are we going to start with?
I think we should look at the livery veils for first.
Ah, we want to do liveries. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
What did you guys think of the event by itself? I mean, besides the liveries and you know,
I'd
what
like
the
to
cars
hear
look like,
thoughts
but, but you know, to have a, let's say, an event where you see all the liveries in one go rather than waiting for separate dates for each team and having to figure out where and how to watch the events. What did you make, Savannah, of you know, seeing everything in one go and having it presented the way it was? What's your general feeling with that?
I can't say I was entirely opposed to the initial idea that was brought forward for the event. And I think a lot of things could have possibly been executed a lot better than what they were. But for the first time on an event of this caliber presented by F1, I think it went down quite smoothly. Some hosting individuals could have been chosen a little bit better, in my opinion. But that's only one person in viewpoint of what was happening. And I know the big controversy that happened was the availability and accessibility of tickets due to pricing and also location choice of the event. I mean, we speak about the British bias in the sport and we landed up in London. But yeah, other than that, I actually enjoyed seeing all cars on the same day. But we did also see that many of the teams, if not all the teams, I stand corrected if I'm wrong, that they still did their own release days on their own social media platforms of their liveries themselves. So, yeah. And you, Sam?
Yeah, I think that the concept, I agree with you in the fact that the concept having all the teams be able to reveal under one umbrella, I really liked that. I think that there's always an excitement when you're watching the liveries reveals. In the previous year, for example, you're waiting for like a specific day and time to go on YouTube and watch a certain reveal. And there's always an element of excitement. But ultimately, I appreciated the difference in having everybody under the same umbrella, under the same venue to be able to release it. I think that, you know, being the first time that they've done this, there are a few things that I personally would maybe think could be adjusted. One being the point that you touched on, Savannah, the tickets and the issue that was happening there. I think as a fan, to make it more accessible for the fans to be able to be there and see that spectacle and everything that took place would be something that maybe they could look at in the future. I think that it was a little interesting to see the initial beginning and in the layout of like an award stage type of situation where you had like at least it's reminiscent where you had like a comedian poking the jokes at the tables. But I think that ultimately when you're thinking about the messaging or what they're trying to do, I think they're trying to bring more of an audience to the sport. And, you know, if it does attract more viewership, that's great, I guess, overall for the sport. But again, few tweaks I think could ultimately have been done. I would also suggest that, yeah, maybe next year if they decide to do this again, it would be interesting to see them do it at different locations in the world, similarly to having different tracks in the world. I think that, of course, Formula One is a worldwide sport, and so it should also be treated in that way, and it would be really nice to see them do it in a different venue, but who knows, maybe that is their plan. Ultimately, I think that it was definitely a lot easier to see everybody within one event and see all the liveries revealed. But Anton, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, as you were saying, I think there's definitely things that could be improved, but I was quite happy to have one event where, you know, you get to see it, you know, if you have all the teams do them on separate dates, there's different moments of small excitement, but this was actually quite nice for seeing everything together in one go, not having to really find out where to watch it. You know, that's sometimes, I remember last year, I wasn't always sure where to be able to stream all the events. There's a lot of young people watching F1 now, but not all of us are that tech savvy. So it's good to have one event, and I thought it was actually quite well executed compared to what I was expecting. Definitely room for improvement, and I also agree if it's going to be held again, then it should be in different venues. But then again, you got to start somewhere, right? So we need to host it somewhere, and there's always going to be pros and cons for each location. So no, all in all, I think it was nice, and I also thought that, you know, giving room for the teams to present their car in the way that they want to present it, it resulted in quite some different ways of executing that. Well, talking about execution, I think it would be nice to, I think we somewhat did that last year too, Sam. I don't know if we really rated the liveries, but it would be cool to pass by each team and see a little bit. Which ones we I'm not sure if we'll be able to do this in the right order. I think what they did was actually they presented it with a reverse team grid, right? So we started with Stake Sauber. What do you guys think about their livery, and how does it compare to that of last year?
I think from the livery last year on many cars we saw a lot of carbon fiber, and I'm just glad to see that we actually seeing some paint this year and actual liveries coming from teams. But Sauber, I don't know, it's just me, it seemed a little bit disappointing. I mean, you want to see that kick essentially as in their name with that punchline green that they're known for. We saw it on the car last year and it almost like disappeared this year. So it was a letdown for me in terms of Sauber.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what I do take from a lot of the liveries in general is I don't see a lot of changes in terms of, like, at least at this point with the naked eye. And I think also given what some teams have expressed leading into this season, a lot of attention is being directed to the 2026 and the cars and the evolution, obviously, and everything that's going to take place there. So I have to wonder that probably not as much attention to make things look more dramatic in term like for changes are happening in 2025 simply because of that. This could be a reflection of it when it comes to Sauber. I do agree. I didn't really see a significant difference. But I also think that they're probably, judging by their performance of last year, I would want to assume that they're probably putting a lot of their eggs into the 2026 basket when it comes to overall design and performance. I think that, you know, you can look at several other liveries and say that it didn't appear there was too much of a change. And some of them, we would expect that. Like I would say Red Bull, for example. Red Bull sticks to pretty much the same thing each year. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that as well. I actually like their livery. I think it's great. And I would say that there were some that had slight differences as well. My personal favorite, I will say, and I'm not sure if anyone else shares this sentiment, but my personal favorite for livery was Ferrari, because I just really like the red that they went with this year. I really, really like the deeper color of red.
100% agree. And I think a lot of people had their say on social media when the livery was released for Ferrari, with that white stripe going down the back end of the car. I'm not opposed to it. I mean, everybody always has their questions about how big the HP logo needs to be and where it needs to be positioned on the car. But I'm kind of liking that break in the solid red, almost like a breathing point, a new vision that's coming into Ferrari. So yeah, I 100% agree with you there, Sam.
Yeah, and rather than rating specific liveries for me, what I like to see is that, you know, the grid as a whole has a range of colors. So I would hate to see, well, just like you were saying, Savannah, like, you know, too much carbon fiber, too much black in all the liveries. You know, I want to have a range, a palette of different colors, not just, you know, because it's nice to the eye and it's easier watching the races and identifying which car is which. I remember there were certain times where it was actually quite hard to sometimes see with the larger shots where you see a lot of cars, which one's which. So I think the more distinct the colors are, the easier it is to identify them. It also, for forecast, I believe it's nice to have a different palette of colors. So I personally don't mind an Alpine being super pink, that way being very different from the rest. I actually think it's quite nice what they are doing. I know a lot of people
you've always don't liked like that livery too, though.
Yeah, it's something different, and it's the same actually for Steak Sauber. It's very mm-hmm. much there with a bright green, but then again, you know, it's something very different from what the rest of the teams are doing. I agree, Sam. There's no need for teams to necessarily make a lot of changes to their livery. You know, if you have a concept that works, and of course, Red Bull also as a concept, I think they want to have people identify Red Bull as Red Bull. That's why they're not changing it too much over the years. McLaren, similar, didn't change the car that much in terms of livery. They have, if you take it over a larger span of years, but from 2024 to 2025, they have not. But I agree, the Ferrari looks super nice. I personally also enjoy when there's slight touches that are different from year to year. That's also, you know, 10 years from now, when you're going to look back at races and there's, you know, one of these legendary races that you want to watch back. Hopefully we're going to have a few in 2025. You know, you're gonna see a shot from that, and you're gonna say, ah yeah, that was the 2025 car where they had, you know, this band of white with the HP logo. I personally don't mind it too much. I mean, it's a distinct livery compared to what Ferrari's been doing previously, and I mean, in the end, the color red is very nice. Another personal favorite of me, I was actually surprised. Well, I guess with the two of you being somewhat Ferrari fans, I shouldn't have been surprised to see Ferrari come up out on top. But I did really, really like the Racing Bulls, or V-Carb, or I don't know. I think this year we're going to call them Racing Bulls mostly.
Yes. But
that livery was, first of all, surprising. I had not expected that they would go for this livery, and it's looking fresh. I kind of really like it. I also like their suits, and it's you know, for a team that perhaps is not as well. I mean, it's also branding, right? I mean, they have Red Bull pretty largely written on the car as well, so that's also somewhat in the same style as what Red Bull's doing. You know, having a concept of a brand, but then again, they switch it up. I mean, if you look at them over the years, they've used various different liveries, and if you put them all together or next to one another, I think this one really, this one really sets out, and it I kind of like it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that Racing Bulls was my second favorite in terms of the livery. I really thought that it was great, and I completely agree with all the points you mentioned, Anton. Even the suits as well. I'm really excited to see that car on the track. But I think ultimately, I mean, you've made some really good points in terms of identifying. I think one of the things that I think is a really good point is, yes, to have a slight change in, like, you don't want to first of all, you want to have your identity and the liveries, if you remain relatively the same, you have that identity to that team, to that car. But to have that slight tweak, just so that, you know, if it to have that memory attached to it, is also a really good point. So I'm glad you touched on that, because I do agree with you. And even you think historically back to certain races, and you identify those races or that time period to the car and what it looked like. Like, if I were to think back to certain periods with McLaren, and I think back to the days when Hamilton was in the car, I mean, obviously the livery was entirely different than the orange that it is now. Or you think to
papaya, Sam. It's not orange.
Or papaya, sorry. Me of all people should not say orange. I will say this in my personal defense. I get teased quite often personally, because my thought process, like the way I identify colors, is not the way most people do. So but yes, it is papaya, so I stand corrected and make sure that I will continue to say papaya.
Go on.
So, do we have any liveries that we can say? You know, we've touched on a few of the highlights. Is there any that we felt maybe were lacking, or do we all collectively agree, based on what we're talking about here, that it's just more or less a lot of the same that we're seeing?
Yeah, you know, I think for me personally, I don't think any livery is ever wrong. I mean, in the end, you know, they're just different, and mm-hmm. you can have personal opinions about which one you like better than the other. I would hate to see a car that's just completely gray without anything on it, but in the end, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with any livery. So same for this year, I'd rather say, you know, some are nicer looking than others, but altogether, it's looking like a nice field. They're going to be relatively easy to identify. Apart from, I suppose, really McLaren and Red Bull, all the other teams have some slight tweaks compared to previous years. And again, yeah, whether they're better or worse, I don't, you know, that's a value to put on to it. But for I don't know if it makes too much sense to really say some livery is bad or not good looking. Like, personally, I'm not the biggest fan of the black and white of Haas. I think it's somewhat boring, but that's a personal opinion. I mean, some other people might really, really like it. It's slightly different than it was last year as well, so I don't know. Altogether, I for me, they're all nice.
Well, I think on the topic of Haas, if the bodywork can actually stay on the car, it would be a different story. I don't think the black and white
good point
will be a problem. But like Oliver Behrmann said in one of the interviews, it's not supposed to do that.
It's true.
No, that is true. And I think what you're mentioning there, well, you're already mentioning one of the rookies, and I think that was one of the next topics that we actually wanted to talk about. You're just mentioning Oliver Behrmann there in the Haas. Of course, we have a total of 6 new rookies, if we all count them as rookies. So we're going to have Jack Doohan in the Alpine. We're going to have Gabriel Bortoleto in the Kick Stake Sauber I'm not 100% sure how we're referring to that team as well. What is going to be Audi, we can call them that too. We have Andrea Kimi Antonelli in the Mercedes, Isaac Hadjar in the Racing Bulls, Oliver Bearman, we just mentioned him, and Liam Lawson and him, we can, well, I mean, they're full-time rookies, so to speak, right? So this is going to be their first full-time season. Both of them have had a couple of races. Of course, we saw Oliver last season as a stand-in for Ferrari when Carlos Sainz was out. If I'm not mistaken, that was the Saudi race, the second race of the season. And then he also stood in for the race where Kevin Magnussen was banned. And actually, Jack Doohan also raced the last race of last season. And Liam Lawson has had a number of races in the previous two seasons. So these six are full-time rookies. And I don't know if we want to. Of course, they're all going to be in different teams. So it's a little bit, it's slightly difficult perhaps to compare all of them. But let me pose the question this way to you, Savannah. Which of these six rookies are you most excited for?
I think probably Kimi. Seeing how Toto and the team at Mercedes helped nurture the seven-time world champion that is Lewis Hamilton, I can only think that they're going to be doing the exact same to get Kimi on the same standard of winning races, then moving on to winning championship after championship. I mean, he really gave it all in F2 last year. And I think we've already seen that he's got his head screwed on pretty well at the Mercedes team and in the garage. So yeah, he's probably the one that I'll be focusing on for the season. But obviously, we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Sam, who's your focal point for this season out of the six rookies?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question because I'm really excited to see all of them. So I can't say that there's... It's difficult for me to say, to be honest, like which one I'm more excited to see, because I think each of them carry a different dynamic, and there's a different interest that plays a part. Like Savannah touched on with Kimi, I think it's really going to be interesting being a rookie that is the youngest rookie on the grid, and we haven't really seen too much out of Kimi to really understand, at least in the F1 world, all of the hype that's coming behind him. So, I mean, I don't doubt Toto's judgment, and I do think that obviously they're investing in someone that they're considering a prodigy. And so I'm really excited to see that unfold, like Savannah's touched on. I think that, though, one that I am probably a little more excited than others, just because I always enjoyed his driving style in F2 as well as Jack Doohan. I think that I'm looking forward to seeing how he plays out in Alpine, and he's also already, before he's even had his first race, he's already under pressure. So he's going to be going into a situation that's already been vocalized, the fact that everybody knows that they have to obviously meet the standards, be able to perform. But he is in a unique position where they already have told him that he has to be able to perform within X amount of races, or he could potentially be replaced. And so I think when you are going in with that added pressure, including being a rookie, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Let's not forget Alpine's start of the year. On a performance level when it came to the car and strategy and everything like that, that also plays a part in their performances and their results. So I'm interested to see how that dynamic's going to play out. And I'm also, you know, I'm excited for all the rest of the rookies. Ollie Bearman, I'm really interested to see how he does, but also we'll see how the Haas actually performs. A lot of things to be excited about, to be honest. And let's not forget that probably one that will make quite a bit of noise is Liam Lawson, Max Verstappen pairing. I'm interested to see how that pairing will continue to unfold as teammates throughout the season. Yeah. Because we've seen how Liam, at least, is quite competitive He gets his elbows out on the track. There's no doubt about that. We saw that in the end of last season. So it's really going to be interesting to me to see how that plays out on the team with Red Bull. This may be actually quite beneficial for them, but time will tell.
Yeah, it's a good point. And of course, also with that team having another team on the grid, where I guess a lot of people were saying that maybe Yuki should have gotten the chance in that Red Bull, and at the same time they've gotten now Hadjar as well on the team, who will be I feel somewhat of a Yuki 2.0. It's going to be interesting to see, because I think he's also in the same way as Yuki, sometimes somewhat vocal in the car and get frustrated. And then with the new swearing ban and everything, I guess we'll touch upon to that as well later on. Personally, I'm very excited to see Bortoleto, and perhaps not in the most exciting car for this year, but I've been very impressed with his racing. I think last year in F2, he didn't have a very good start of the season, but the latter part of the season was incredible, and I'm very excited to see how he's going to work together and compete against Nico Hülkenberg, also switching teams, and perhaps Stake as a team is not at this point in time the most exciting team on the grid, but then again it's going to be a very interesting duel between the two of them, while at the same time working together. I feel that the two can really help one another. And you mentioned there the pairing of Red Bull, which is an interesting one, but there's so many more. I mean, we're going to have Behrmann pairing up with Ocon in the Haas. And I mean, after all, Ocon is very experienced, but it's also going to be a new team for him. And there's of course, been a history with him and teammates. It's not always worked out very well. That's an interesting dynamic for this season. I think when we went into 2024, we had a grid that was initially unchanged, and no switches of drivers between teams. And we're actually, we're going to start a season where there's many switches, many changes, and also perhaps a slightly different vibe to the whole season, everyone knowing that 2026 is going to be the year with the big rule changes. So I guess it's, with that many different drivers and different seats, it's also the year for everybody to get comfortable with their team and see how they prepare going into 2026. Some teams will not develop as much during this year. I think, teams such as Alpine, who have already announced that, but also we have Sauber, who we just talked about. I mean, they're going to become Audi. I think they're going to focus very much on the 2026 season. Now, there's going to be other teams that might get into a thrilling title championship battle, and they might be very much focusing on winning that and improving the car for this year. And so there's going to be different strategies for different teams, and it's going to be very interesting to see how that develops. And of course, I think what all of us are hoping is that we're going to see somewhat similar to last season, although last season started out with Red Bull being quite dominant, but later on the season we would find that actually things were closing, getting quite close to one another. And I guess we're all hoping that for this year it's going to be one of those seasons where it's going to take us very, very long to find out who's actually going to be the drivers contesting for the title. And I guess, knock on wood, but this could really be, in that sense, a great premise of a season. I don't know. I think I mentioned that we would talk about expectations at the end of the podcast, but if I think I can speak for all three of us that we're very excited to see a grid with very little between the teams. And you know, testing days are, of course, and I guess that was the other topic that we were going to talk about. So let's talk a little bit about the testing. It's interesting because, you know, every year you live up, or you know, we're all very excited after a bit of a break to get back into Formula One, and we're ready to see what the testing is going to show us. But of course, in the end, testing is also very much about, you know, the teams finding the balance in the car, data gathering, you know, the aero settings, using the rake to measure the aero loads, fuel consumption, you know, all these things what drivers do in terms of getting the right setup. And it's not so much to really show to the average viewer what the competitive differences are going to be. I guess you could say that the spread on these testing days is a little bit larger than they are usually in an FP session before the start of a race weekend. But what did the two of you, and starting with you, Savannah, what did you take away from the last 3 days where we where we saw the cars, getting ready for the season? What were your takeaways?
First of all, we can still see that the teams that we saw as front runners, I'm going to name the top three, which was in order of constructors, McLaren, Ferrari, Red Bull, they all still have very strong cars. But the one team that I surprisingly focused a lot on due to the switch that happened towards the end of last year was Williams. They came in with a car last year that wasn't performing too great. Their season started getting a little bit better as we started getting into it throughout the year. And I think they ended on a pretty good note for themselves last year. But when we suddenly got to testing now in Bahrain, we are leaving the 3 days of testing with Carlos topping the entire last day's timesheets. And I know that the team has mentioned that their 2026 car has been on the lips of the team since round about the 2nd or 3rd of January this year. So obviously they might be a team that's pushing for 2025 to really get themselves in a position where many of their systems are already developed enough that they could ultimately remain the same with the new 2026 regulations coming in very soon. But I think they're probably going to want to push with somebody like Carlos, who has multiple wins with a team like Ferrari and being on podiums in McLaren in his past in the sport. So I think they're definitely going to start pulling plugs where they need to, and definitely putting fingers into pies where it'll benefit them. So I think one of my teams that I'm going to focus on this year, after looking at testing, is definitely Williams, but I will definitely have my eyes first on Ferrari, because the Lord above knows that this better be our year, otherwise the tears will fall.
Again, going to be your year.
Of course. We live in delusional land. We're going to remain there.
Listen, I think there is so much excitement to see that driver pairing, and to see Lewis to see a race the first time when we're going to see the race in Australia with Lewis behind a Ferrari car, and that's I think where it's really going to hit. So I'm
very excited. So Lewis behind a Ferrari car, so that means he's behind Leclerc. But this is what you're expecting. It's a good question, though. No, I mean, what do you think? How did they compare?
I'm not. Yeah, it is a good. You know what? I think it's a very good question, and I think that. I mean, look, Leclerc's coming into a situation where he's had years of experience at this point behind a Ferrari, and Lewis has not. Lewis has had a lot of experience behind another car and another team. And so he actually, I would say, is coming in, although he is, yes, a seven-time world champion, he's also older, and he has the experience, but he also has he has the lack of experience in that car and with that team. And so I think that he will, although he's a seven-time world champion, he's also coming with as an underdog in a sense with that. But however, I think that you can never doubt his brilliance as a driver. And I think one of his strong suits as a driver is actually his mental fortitude. And the fact that, I mean, we've seen time and time again him in situations where he'll even vocally express his frustration, but somehow he finds a way. And so I think with that is such a very strong quality to have, and his drive to succeed and his single-minded focus and desire to win is something that really sets him, is one of the important reasons why he has become such a pivotal figure in the sport. So I'm really excited to see him get into Ferrari. Back to your question, Anton, do I believe that he's going to be behind Leclerc? With all that said, I think that initially, yes, just for what I already explained with the experience that Leclerc has. But I also think, don't count him out. I think he's going to be, I think the possibility lies more in the fact that he's going to, how quickly he's going to respond in a Ferrari car and become more competitive with Leclerc. And then when that happens, I think it's really going to get interesting. So that's my thought when it comes to that driver pairing. Ultimately, it's going to be something that everybody is going to be paying attention to. There is no doubt about that.
I 100% agree with you there, Sam. Looking at the testing times of both Ferraris, Leclerc top time sheets in one of his sessions, I think it was an AM session on day three, and he held it there for quite a long period of time. I think he was probably on the top of the chart for a good hour and a half, maybe even two. But that being said, in the same breath, Lewis also topped time sheets in testing. So I definitely think that Ferrari isn't favoring one or the other at this point, because I think they know how valuable Lewis is coming into the team, and they're just giving him a little bit of space to really find his footing. But Hamilton has also said in media interviews that he also has a lot to learn from Leclerc, like you say, where Leclerc has the experience in the Ferrari team. He knows how his entire garage setup works. He obviously speaks the Italian language, which Hamilton has already put himself forward into wanting to learn, wanting to gather that information to be on a more personal level with his engineers, with his mechanics. So I think this driver pairing of Hamilton and Leclerc, like you say, is going to be one of the first things people start watching out for when Melbourne rolls around. But like we say, we can't count out Lewis at all. He has his experience that he's gotten over the teams that he's been with. And I think Leclerc is also going to learn from that as well. Possibly handling certain situations better than what he has in the past with previous teammates. So team orders might become a little bit more interesting this year from a Ferrari point of view. I know we always said papaya rules, but that's apparently flown out the window. And they haven't favoured a driver at McLaren either. So I think a lot is at stake for Ferrari to keep both drivers on the same level for time being until the season starts unfolding.
Yeah, and I think what besides, you're mentioning team orders there, what I also find interesting is just the development of the car, because I do think that Charles and Lewis have slightly different driving styles. I think Charles is more, part of the new generation of drivers where, drivers are keen to have, a pointy front. And I think Lewis is more one of the drivers that wants to, have a steady rear of the car. And there's differences there. And that's going to be interesting in what direction Ferrari is going to develop the car. And I do think that looking at the last two seasons, Lewis, I think, as a teammate to George Russell, I think what he was struggling with, George is a good qualifier. We know that. And was called Mr. Saturday for a reason. And I think that Lewis struggled to get to that same level of qualifying. Race pace, he's brilliant. even at his age. I mean, he's definitely one of the best on the grid regarding that. But it's going to be frustrating now competing against a driver that even more so is really a top-notch qualifier. And you were mentioning, Sam, Charles has been in that team for a long time now. And, you know, when Hamilton was competing against Russell, he was finding himself in a team that he was very comfortable with an engine that he's been using. I mean, even when he started with McLaren, he was using a Mercedes engine. He felt very comfortable and was struggling in qualifying against his new teammate. And I think it's going to be even more tough. And also, mentally, you know, challenging when you're going to have the other driver in the seat being, you know, very, very competitive in qualifying and probably starting higher up the grid in the beginning of the first few races of the season. And yeah, if, you know, if the team also does need to make those decisions during the race, then I think, you know, as a general rule of thumb, I think most teams go for the driver that has more points in the championship, you know, unless one driver is obviously, I wonder if Lawson actually scores points in the first few races and Verstappen has DNFs, I think Red Bull is still going to favor Verstappen. But I think in other teams, such as McLaren, such as Ferrari, but also others, they're going to favor the driver that has more points in the championship. So if Lewis does struggle in the beginning of the season, it's only going to become a larger mental struggle later on. But who knows? I mean, I might be completely wrong. I think the only thing I can really say is that I really hope it is going to be a very, very tight and interesting battle in the Ferraris. And honestly, it would be great if they... I'm not an outspoken Ferrari fan, but I would love to see them having a really, really fast car this year, and the championship battle between Leclerc and Hamilton. Well, that would simply be amazing. But I guess we are getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. I think as a conclusion of this,
you
these testing
be.
Days, we can say that McLaren looks strong. I think they look very much capable of continuing the trend that they have set in the second part of last season. I think they are looking strong. I think Red Bull doesn't look as comfortable as they did in testing ahead of 2023 and 2024. I think they are mostly, you know, searching. I think the Red Bull was a very, very quick car at certain races last year, but their operating window, or their, let's say, their optimum level of performance was ranging in a slightly smaller range. You know, there were few circuits where they were really as good as they could be, and I think McLaren was very good on a wider range of circuits, and I think this is what Red Bull is going to be looking for this year, not necessarily to improve or make the performance of the car that much better, but mostly making sure that they're better at a larger range of different circuits. But all in all, I think we can also say that there's not really a team that looks miles behind one of the other teams. I think last year, you know, we were talking about Williams not really, or we saw that at the beginning of the first few races that Williams didn't even have any you know, spare parts for the car. We've seen that actually in various, if you go back a few years, I think Williams didn't even have a car ready for testing. You know, these kind of things we're not seeing, which I'm very happy to say, because that means, you know, the field is supposedly still quite, you know, tight. And I think, you know, that's also to be expected with this being the last year of the rules that we have now. Of course, we have slight changes, but not so much. So the field is supposed to be very competitive. And I hope, I said it before, but I'm really excited to see that the field is really very competitive. And we're going to see many different race winners like we did last year, even though, yeah, last year is a funny year because in the end, it wasn't for the championship. It was just not that exciting. But if we look at, you know, a race-to-race basis, it was actually very exciting because you would not know beforehand who's going to win a race. And that has been different in the past. So I guess that's Yeah, that's my main conclusion. Other conclusions I'm not going to draw up until we've seen the first few races. But I don't know if the two of you have some other things that you're excited for before we start to talk a little bit about forecast, or are there other things that we have completely missed? I think we haven't mentioned Aston Martin yet. We've hardly mentioned Alpine yet. What else is yet to be mentioned?
I think ultimately the thing about preseason testing is that it gives you indicators, but there's so much more that goes into the races, and there's so much more that evolves in terms of performance and where teams actually end up. And so I think with that being said, I'm just excited overall to get started. And more than anything, I'm really excited that the first race is in Australia, because Australia, I mean, if last year and the year prior is any reflection, we know that it really kicks off in Australia. So I'm just more or less looking forward to just seeing everybody on the track, seeing everything that we've discussed already, like all the rookies, the new driver pairings, the cars, seeing really after the preseason testing how things are going to shake up, and then also seeing the dynamics within the strategic side and the teams overall, and how that's going to start to play out. I think we'll obviously, as we all know, have a better indicator as to maybe the direction of these teams once we see the tires on the track in Australia. So I'm just more or less excited to get the season started. I'm ready for the lights out.
Now, I think on my side, you've covered absolutely everything that I would wanted to say as well, Sam. I think the other thing that I'm looking forward to is saying to people, sorry, my Sunday is completely out of the question. It is my day and race day, so I also can't wait.
Respect that.
Yeah, I think the best way to really accomplish that is just to, you know, get as many people around you involved in watching Formula One, so that everyone not only understands what you're doing but also wants to do the same thing. I think that's the most that's probably the best way of organizing your Formula One weekends exactly the way you want them to be. So that's obviously a secret hint into, you know, getting other people to play forecast, because that's what we're very much excited about, is, you know, getting new people to play for a season. I think that's a little segue into talking about some of the updates that we have for this year. And
perfect,
you know,
segue.
I think I'm happy to say that the growth that we've been seeing over the past 3 years, you know, in the first season in 2022, we had a total of 450 different people that made at least one prediction for one of the races of the season. So 450 unique players. In the second year, it was 1,541, if I'm not mistaken. And then last year we had 2,824 different players. So I think it's fair to say that the trend is upward. And we have, I recently posted one of these reels actually on Instagram where it shows how many players we have per race weekend. And I think that last year, the last 12 races of the season, we've always had more than 1,000 people playing the game. So I'm very glad. I hope that it doesn't drop below the 1,000 anymore, and I hope we're gonna touch the 2,000 per race. So the only way to really accomplish that is if all of you guys are, you know, helping to get more people on board, more people to play, more people, you know, even if they're only slightly interested in F1, it's a good way to actually become more interested. I've seen it with people that just enjoy the game element of forecast, not so much Formula One, actually start to get excited more and more about Formula One because of it. So that's one of the giveaways that I wanted to give to all of you. But second, I think it's very important that we talk a little bit about a couple of the updates that we have. And we have released a 2.0 version of the game. Now that has a couple of updates, but we are still working on a 3.0 version of the game as well. So that means there's still a couple of updates to come before the start of the season. So the ones that you may have already seen, but if you've not, I'm just going to explain them and lay them out here. I think a couple are more focused on the friendliness of, let's say, user friendliness of the game. So what a lot of people complained about, or what was also one of the things that I struggled with, is if you've made a prediction and you wanted to make changes to it, you know, it was a bit of a puzzle always to, you know, deselect drivers and then put them in the spots where you wanted them to be, and they would, you know, on the drop down, they would be at the bottom of the drop down all of a sudden, and that didn't really lead to the easiness of changing your predictions. You know, you might set your predictions early on going into the race weekend, and then after watching free practice 1 and 2, you might think that, hey, I want to switch this and that up, or a driver has a penalty, so you want to make an alteration to your predictions. Well, now at the bottom of the prediction page, there is a button where you can clear your selection, and basically with one click of the button you deselect all the drivers from your picks and you start from scratch, so you start all over again. I think that personally that's one of the things that I think is going to make it a lot more easy also to, you know, even if you, I don't know how many of you do this, but I know people that actually right after a race weekend already set their prediction for the next race, and then, you know, just before getting to the deadline of the next race, look back at them and either change them or keep them the way they are. But that's going to be a lot easier, because if you do that and you want to make changes, you can actually make those changes much easier than before.
Yeah, that's definitely going to play a huge part in terms of convenience overall. And there's a few other really cool things that have been introduced, hasn't there? So
right, yeah. So there's now for the if you want to see the rankings or the race results, before we had a search function where you could search for your name or for the name of whomever else, we now are applying a couple of different filters. So in the version 2.0 forecast, and you can update it by going to your App Store or Play Store and checking if it's already automatically updated or not. You might have to do that manually, but you'll see that there's a filter now for countries. So, you know, you can go to the standings, to the ranking of the season, and you can apply the filter of any country that you want to look at. So let's say like Sam, you're Canadian and you want to see, you know, what's the ranking of Canadians in this season, then you click on the Canadian flag and you see only the standings of Canadian people. And in the same way for race results, you can do the exact same. You just go to the race results, you click on the race, and you apply that country filter. Now, that's the filter for countries. There's going to be more filters in version 3.0, which is going to be a filter for regions and for continents. So that actually means you can also filter in the standings or the race results, you can filter for one whole continent. So let's say you want to see the scores only for North America, or the scores only for Europe, or the scores only from Africa. You apply that filter and you see the scores or the rankings only for those people. I've also split up the world into different regions, or, well, the world is split up in different regions, let's put it that way. And you can filter for the region that you're in. So for example, I live in the Caribbean. You can apply the Caribbean filter and you will see the scores and the results only of people from Caribbean island. And you can do the same for Central America, and you can do the same for West Europe, East Europe, Mediterranean Europe. You can do that for all parts of Africa, East, West, Southern, Northern, Central Africa, and the same for Asia, and so on. So that's going to be cool, because you know, depending on where you're from, depending on your nationality, you're going to be represented obviously in the scores of that country, but also in the scores of the region and in the scores of that continent. So you're automatically in a competition, even though, you know, we're all in a worldwide competition, you're also in different regional competitions. So that's going to be new. And I think the update that personally myself I'm most excited about is the inclusion of groups in the app. So, you know, I think a lot of you who are playing were always struggling to, you know, just have a quick overview just for the people that you know that are in the game. So let's say you're playing the game, you have a brother that plays, you have a cousin that plays, and you have a couple of friends that play. Well, now you can actually create your own group. You give it a name, you create the group, you get a unique code that you can share with your friends. They can join the group that way. And after you've formed your group, you can apply that group filter onto the scores, onto the race results, onto the rankings. So, you know, everyone is free to make as many groups as they want. There's actually, there was initially an upper limit. I've communicated that to some of you of being in 20 different groups at the same time. We've upped that actually to 50. So you can make a separate group just with your friends.
Wild.
Or another group just with your family. Or you can join groups that other channels are making. So of course, you know, we, as you might know, we have several larger Instagram profiles that are playing the game. They are also now creating their subgroups. So, you know, if you're a follower of Box Talk, or if you're a follower of Faust Nacho, or if you're a follower of Polmat, or you know, any of these Instagram pages that have a group created, you can, you know, use that code of that group and join that group, and you're in a competition only with the followers of those Instagram pages. So yeah, that's for me a very cool function, and it's also I suppose a good way, you know, to get other people excited to play, because you can actually now compete against your friends or family or whomever else. And yeah, well, I think as a platform where, you know, the idea is that you compete with people worldwide, I think you know, this adds a new dimension to what we were already doing.
No, I'm super stoked. Yeah. About the group addition to the app. I think it'll also make it a lot more user-friendly in terms of searching for where you are in the standings. If, like I had last year when I started with Forecast, getting my bearings on the app, I was somewhere in the thousands down at the bottom of the pack, and scrolling to get to my name, it took a long time. But thankfully, I'm racing with a much higher number than I was this year. I'm
nice.
Number 16, so I'm repping my fave driver as well, Charles Leclerc. So this year, I'm telling you guys, this year is the year. I have a feeling.
That's actually interesting. You both have racing numbers that are driver numbers. Although
yeah.
I think Daniel,
yes,
Ricciardo, Sam is no longer in the on the grid, but it hurts
I
me
was
to
waiting
say
for it.
It hurts me a little bit that, you know, I'm actually being beaten by the two people that are joining me on the forecast, on the podcast, because yeah, Sam, you finished third last season. Savannah, you just mentioned it, you were 16th. I finished outside of the top 20. I finished 22nd. So talking about goals,
still not too
you know
shabby.
What mine is for this year.
Well,
mine's
yes, and
mine's top 10.
That's a good goal to have. And I think Anton and I, our first immediate goal has always been who finishes ahead of the other. And then secondly, it's where do we stand amongst everyone. But I will say this, like, in just to touch on when it comes to the updates, I think one of the most significant update, Anton, that you've highlighted there is the group feature, like the ability for people to be able to access groups and be able to see their standings amongst their friends or amongst their countries, like you highlighted, is such a great feature. But also it's a really big part of Forecast F1 as a whole as well, because we've always communicated the fact that a huge part of Forecast F1 is building a community of people that have the same interest of Formula One and coming together. And I think that the groups are just another great extension of that, of people being able to compete against each other. And it doesn't matter whether you're looking at country, whether you're looking at friends, whether you're looking at your arch rivals, but you're able to ultimately be able to form little communities. And I think that it's a really great thing for the continued evolution of Forecast F1. So I'm really excited that it's been introduced. And I think the only other thing that I'll just mention there, based on what you've explained, is the growth as well. Like the growth over the past 3 years, I'm excited going into 2025 to see how things continue the trajectory and how many more people are a part of the game. And those that have been a part of the game for whether it's a year, 2 years, or even right at the inception of things, just having fun and being able to really have another element of the sport that where you can feel connected to it in some capacity. And yeah, and then of course our continued evolution, right? Here we are 3 years in on the podcast. a lot of things have we've gotten, I guess, a little bit more comfortable in comparison to our first year, our first episode. And now joining us with you, Savannah, being a fixture and a great addition, I think that there's a lot of really optimistic things to look forward to this year.
100% agree with you, Sam, and thank you again, guys, for trusting me enough to be part of a permanent team. Like I said right in the beginning, I'm looking so forward to everything that's coming our way in 2025.
Yeah, and just before I forget, you're mentioning there the several different years that we've been doing this now, Sam. But I also would like to say that there's another small little update coming for version 3.0, is that there's going to be another heading on the home screen called Seasons, where you can go back and actually view the results of previous seasons. So you can see who won the previous seasons. The app was made for the first time last year, and all the scores are going to be reset. So for this year, of course, we're going to have new high scores. We're going to start the rankings from zero. So just to be able to look back, and also to, Sam, to make sure that, people actually see that you finished third in 2024.
There's my breaking rights.
Yeah, exactly. So there's going to be a section where you're going to see the results of previous seasons, or basically just a ranking, of who was first, second, third, and scrolling down. So that way, it gives you some bragging rights, and it gives you a way to look back at where everyone was, and I think it's also a way where you can see actually where your racing number is coming from. So I guess we were mentioning that, but maybe not everyone is aware. So the idea is that the number you're racing with this year is the number that you, or the final position that you finished in last year. So as Sam was saying, she finished third, Savannah finished 16th. So that means your racing numbers are 3 and 16 for this season. So, not only does that give you, of course, we're all trying to finish first, even not for finishing first, you can set as a goal to have a better racing number as you did the previous year, which at least that's the only thing I did accomplish last year, because the year before I finished 52nd, I finished 22nd. So I'm my goal is to get below that. I guess, Sam, your only way to improve that is either to come second or win it this year. So, you've got things. You've got a good challenge ahead.
No pressure.
I have a tall order.
No pressure.
I definitely have a tall order.
Yeah, and other than that, and that's not something we're including now for this year in the app, but it's definitely something I want to include for next year. Of course, throughout the year, we're also accumulating all the points for all the countries. So, we're looking at where everyone's from and how many points they score, and we add that to the point tally of that country. And it's going to be an interesting battle this year as well, because actually we saw a bit of an evolution throughout 2024, where actually in the second half of the season we've got a couple of places where a lot of new players are popping up. The last two seasons Argentina has won this competition with having by far the most amount of points, but with the amount of players that have joined in the second part of 2024 from Kenya and Zambia, I'm actually very excited to see where they are gonna rank this year. And there's a couple of other places. We've had a large following in Lebanon, And that, of course, also has to do with the collaboration that we have with the DRS Lane. They're a Formula One shop in Beirut, and they give actually a $10 voucher to the highest scoring Lebanese player each race weekend. That has created a very good following of Lebanese players for Forecast, and it's going to be exciting to see who are winning the vouchers for this game. For this year's season, we also have a new collaboration with a Formula One shop in Manila in the Philippines. It's called Pre-Game Motor Shop Merchandise, and not only do they have a F1 shop, they also have an F1 bar where they host watch parties, and they're also going to create a competition for their membership club, which they have. People that have previously purchased from them are going to be predicting and competing against one another for actually a whole set of different prizes, things they will be handing out per race, but also at the end of the season. So that's going to be very exciting. I'm excited to see whether that's gonna, you know, create a larger following in the Philippines for Forecast, and you know, we're very excited to get into these type of collaborations and you know, find new groups, and with the new group function in the app, it's also going to be a lot easier in the future to make those things. And you know, after all, not only within those group we're fighting for a prize, but of course let's not forget that the winner at the end of the season wins a Formula One TV subscription for a year. So that was actually a very exciting battle last season, with Rosario Finci being in P1 for almost a full season, and then giving it away on the last day of the season to Joseph Morgan, who finished P1. So I'm really hoping that we're going to see another exciting battle for the win for this year. And well, I just in general hope that we're going to see some you know, unpredictable races, which means also you know, unpredictable scores for the game. So all in all, the only thing that leaves me to say is that I'm super excited for this season.
Same here.
I think we all collectively agree on that.
Yep.
Definitely.
Hundreds.
Well, may the best man or women win.
Out of the three of us, who would you say, Anton, is going to be top of the charts by end of year, if we're going in completely blind? It's a sprint weekend.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it it's going to depend a lot on how well Ferrari's going to perform and how delusional the two of you are going to be with Ferrari predictions. I think that's going to be the bottom line of it. No, but I don't know. I've been able to beat Sam twice in the first two seasons, but you know, last season has gotten me to think that you know, I might not be that good in my own game after all. So I don't know. I'll be very happy to see the two of you ahead of me. I really wouldn't mind. It's always fun to see people in the top 10 that I actually do know personally. I hope the two of you perform well, but of course I am going to be very competitive this year as well. But I don't know, I'm gonna after last year I mean finishing P3 and in a season, and actually, I mean, Sam, you not only finished P3, but you actually were performing much better in the second half of the season than you were in the first half of the season. So I would definitely say that last year it was the second half of the season that was by far more difficult to predict. So actually you seem to do well in such circumstances. But then again, Savannah, you were just already mentioning it was your first year of playing. So I think there was only one or two other Forecast rookies that finished ahead of you. We should still do a overview with rookie players from last year and how they finished. I think you might be on the podium there, but I know who I'm up against.
Yeah, no, but I think everybody on the statistics of the fact that Forecast has grown so much in the past few years, I think there's a lot more drive from the players in their predictions. And obviously last year's season threw a bit of a spanner in the works, because everybody started off with saying, okay, it's going to be Red Bull again this season. Suddenly McLaren said hi, and Ferrari came around the bend and said, no, not a chance. So Yeah, I think if we have another season like last year, the predictions will become quite interesting.
Yeah, I think one thing's for certain is that we are in for another exciting season of Formula One.
All right. Well, actually, I think we're going to have to debate on what we finish the podcast with, because we usually play the anthem of of the person that winning the quiz, but we're not doing any quiz. So I guess for this, we'll do the regular outro that we started with in the beginning of recording this
Yeah, I
podcast.
think that's
But
good.
I'm also reminding the two of you that, you know, now being fixed members of both of the podcast, you know, we're gonna have to keep track actually of the amount of wins in the quiz for both of you to see you know who beats who in that regard.
It's a new
So
prediction game
that's
that's coming our way, Sam.
that's gonna be very
Right?
exciting. So it's not gonna be standalone
Anton does a
weekends.
good job of that.
It's not gonna be only standalone weekends. It's gonna be you know, we're gonna look at the season as a whole as well. So I don't know. That one, I don't know who I'm putting my money on.
Yeah, I think in the one or two times that Sam and I did compete against each other last year while I was still a guest, it was pretty neck and neck, and it was like one deciding question or two deciding questions. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what happens this year.
This is probably going to be a lot of Canadian and South African anthems.
Well, I mean, I also have a pretty long history of not doing so well on the predictions when it comes to the game. So that seems to be an area of improvement, definitely. But let's see. You know, I'm really excited to get into it this year. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Awesome. So am I.